You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, your daily look at LeBron James and the rest of the always interesting Cleveland Cavaliers. I am Chris Manning, your host and the site manager at SB Nation Through the Sword. On today's show, I'm joined by the awesome Duncan Smith. He is a writer for The Athletic and B-Ball Breakdown to talk about Monday's Cavs-Pistons game, which tips off at 7 p.m. in Cleveland. For the Cavs, it is the last game of their homestand before they embark on a pretty long two-week-ish Western Conference trip because of the MAC tournament taking place at Quick Loans Arena during that time. But Duncan, thanks so much for coming on.
It's my pleasure, Chris. Thanks.
So the Pistons have changed a lot since the Cavs last faced them. I think when these two teams last played, I think the day of the Blake Griffin trade happened. It was also the date that in the game that Kevin Love broke his hand, and he's been out ever since. He's not going to be back for this, although it seems like he's getting back closer. But so look at the Blake trade. How have the Pistons changed since then? And I know they had that success right off the bat, but why haven't they had that same level of play after those first couple of really good games with Blake?
A big factor in why the first few games went really well, I think they started off 5-0, and the last nine games now, have gone poorly is pretty much all of the wins they have been against teams on the second day of back-to-back, sometimes like the third night and four. So they were doing a really good job of picking off fatigued teams in the early stages. But whenever a team has like even just one day of rest, that team has so far been undefeated against this new look Blake Griffin era Pistons squad. They just have not been able to beat anybody on rest. Like it took overtime to lose to Orlando the other night, for example, but, or the Orlando Magic, were sitting at home waiting for the Pistons, and, you know, the Pistons more or less had to fight back all game long against the Magic, managed to force overtime, and, then ran out of gas in overtime against the Magic. You know, they scored 2 points and they were Anthony Tolliver, free throws in a 5-minute period against the Magic. And they honestly just cannot beat teams that are not fatigued and road weary right now.
To look at Blake specifically, obviously he's played 14 games for them. It's not a huge sample size, and it's certainly it's got to be an adjustment for him. Playing for Detroit, playing with different guys, even if Drummond is sort of similar to what he had in DeAndre as a center. But let's just run through his stats real quick. He's playing 33.3 minutes per night. He's taking 16.6 shots a game, only shooting 40.1% from the field. That's a 4% drop from where he was with the Clippers this season. His three-point shooting, I think, most interestingly, is down to 27.4%. That was at 34.2% on more attempts with the Clippers, 18.8 points per game, averaging 6.9 rebounds a game, which is down one, but makes sense because of Drummond. How has, in your mind, Blake looked, and why is he have his numbers? Is he actually struggling in a way that has been noticeable?
I'd say it's been noticeable. He does show some of those flashes, you know, like the quick post moves and stuff that he's known for. But I think that we're kind of seeing he's pressing to some degree. But you know, we're also seeing the fruition of some of that lack of athleticism, some of that reduced athleticism. From, you know, so many years of taking a pounding and now like injuries, you know, he's yet to play a fully healthy season since, I'm looking at his numbers here, 2013-14. He's never played 67 games or more, since that point. And so I think that some shots just aren't falling. He's also been carrying maybe a little bit more of the load than you would prefer when you're as inefficient as Blake has been so far. His usage is almost 29%, and his true shooting percentage, so, you know, factoring in points scored through free throws, from threes and all this, his true shooting percentage is just a shy, just a shade over 50% at 50.1%. So he's been a high usage, low efficiency kind of player for the Pistons, and that's something that Reggie Jackson last year was very much the same way. Avery Bradley earlier this season was much the same way, just high usage, low efficiency, and it's really become quite the theme for this Pistons squad over the last year or so. You'd like to see better, even struggling, you would like him to be producing more offensively than that.
I don't know how you felt about the trade when it happened, but with how Blake's looked with how the Pistons, and we're going to talk about this more later in the show, but as they have dropped off out of the playoff race, it seems, having just lost to the Heat, lost to the Magic, four games back of Miami as we record this. Do you feel any differently about the trade and them going for this, and Van Gundy in particular going for this? When I've already seen editorials on in the Free Press calling for his head, do you feel differently about where the Pistons are right now compared to when the trade happened, a little over a month ago?
I would say that I feel almost vindicated in a way. Not that I was hoping for things to go as badly as they have, but I was very strongly against this trade. Coming up to like the pre-trade deadline period, my biggest wish for the Pistons is that they did not make any kind of like a win now move that mortgaged any of the future. So to me, that meant like trading draft picks is out of the question, taking on long-term salaries out of the question, trading Luke Kennard and/or Stanley Johnson, because I still have hope for Stanley. In involving them in some sort of like a win now move that would take on like hefty amounts of salary, like long-term salary, and giving up draft picks or future assets, to me were just absolute no-goes for a team that really has, as of, say the middle of January, I think their realistic ceiling would have been like a 7 or an 8 seed. And then they get plowed by the Cavs or the Raptors or the Celtics, trading away future draft picks, trading away future assets, and taking a long-term salary is simply not part of the calculus that I want to incorporate for this team going forward. So when rumors came out on trade day that this was going to be happening, I was very much against it. I could see like the optimism. Maybe Blake stays healthy. Maybe he maybe he's the star this Pistons team needs, but at the same time, like, he hasn't played more than 2/3 of his team's games since 2013. He's got a $173 million contract. The Pistons don't have a draft pick unless they somehow or another miraculously find themselves in the top four. I really was strongly against this trade, and I wish there was some sort of an undo button that we could use to go back and get that draft pick back, even if the Pistons had to eat Avery Bradley's like $8 million for the rest of the season and not get anything back for him. I think that taking on Blake's mammoth contract and his advanced age now, really, he's turning 29 sometime this month. This was kind of my worst case scenario when it became clear that the Pistons were going to have to make a decision whether they're going to be buyers or sellers. This exact scenario is my worst case scenario, and I think that we're seeing more or less all of the worst elements of that playing out right now.
When you look at the success of the team, if you go to the NBA.com/, you put in the filter of when Blake has made his debut. In terms of defensive rating, it's not as bad as their offense, and finding it real quick because I can't read. They're 13th in defensive rating, 106.9. For context, the Cavs over that same span are at 112.1. And the Cavs have been better defensively in moments since the trades, but that's where they stand. Offensively is a different story. And Blake's, I think an offensive player more than anything. Right now, since that date, the Pistons are 21st in offense at 104.6 per 100 possessions. That's just behind Portland, New Orleans, OKC. But the teams they're ahead of, basically, are the tankers. It's the Mavs, the Nets, The Bucks are not a tanking team, but they have their own kind of set of issues. The Kings, the Bulls, the Hawks, the Knicks, the Suns, the Grizzlies. Basically, every team since the Bucks, who have Giannis and are going to make the playoffs, are tanking or are just actively bad. When you look at this, I mean, what do you attribute that to? Is it the new fit? Is it something Van Gundy's doing or not doing? Is it just the surrounding personnel doesn't quite complement what Drummond and Blake are, or are Drummond and Blake not working together? What do you attribute a struggling Pistons offense to over that span, where they're 6-8?
Well, I think honestly, for better or worse, when Reggie Jackson went down the day after Christmas, this team's season was over. This team is basically built to function with Reggie Jackson as not necessarily like the straw that stirs the drink, but he's a very significant piece of the puzzle. One of the biggest problems is that when Jackson goes down, Ish Smith becomes a starter. So now you've got a lineup, like a starting lineup that until recently had Stanley Johnson. You have Ish Smith, you have Blake Griffin, who will, you know, try to spread the floor. He's shooting 5 threes per game with the Pistons. And then Andre Drummond. Like, those are four guys who cannot be relied upon to hit a three. Reggie Bullock has been shooting lights out this season. That's great. But you have a starting lineup that just doesn't click, doesn't fit. And simply having a point guard that can shoot the ball like Reggie could, and was also a better than advertised facilitator. He did make a pretty big difference, and I think that more or less every decision that Stan Van Gundy has made since Reggie Jackson went down, and all the pieces that just fit right with Jackson in the lineup, more or less, I would say that just about every decision that Van Gundy has made since then has been a poor decision. I think that he has dealt with changing and negative circumstances very poorly. For example, this summer, this is something that I've harped upon probably to excess. I think some of Pistons Twitter is probably sick of hearing about this particular aspect of the Pistons summer, but they hard capped themselves around noon on July 1st for Langston Galloway. They did this as Reggie insurance, in their own words. And Langston Galloway, I think, has gotten 9 DNP coaches decisions since Reggie Jackson went down. You know, they've not cashed in on this insurance policy. And it's not so much that Langston Galloway is a guy who should be expected to like fill that gap necessarily. It's that the Pistons thought that he could. And now, in order to sort of like overcorrect, they've got him playing. They are DNPing Luke Kennard, who was their lottery pick last summer. And they've got Dwight Bikes, who is a converted two-way player, playing backup point guard to Ish Smith. And honestly, Bikes is a really, really good Summer League championship game away from the Pistons, against the Pistons, away from maybe not being in the NBA. That's more or less what made him stick out and what made the Pistons make him the oldest two-way player this season. You know, Van Gundy has just sort of snowballed poor decision on top of poor decision, and his front office decisions have impacted the on-court product pretty significantly. And now you've got a situation where Van Gundy has to choose between Langston Galloway, who can't really do the things that apparently he thought that he could do, that Van Gundy thought that he could do, and Luke Kennard, and his backup point guard is Dwight Bikes behind Ish Smith. And it's not a good situation. It's not what you'd like to see going into the final stages of year four of Van Gundy's tenure. It's not what you'd like to see with one of the most expensive teams in basketball. And this is a team that doesn't have its own draft pick next season, and it will not make the playoffs this season, almost certainly.
And like the other two-way guy, at least last time I checked, is Kay Felder, who was with the Cavs, was with the Bulls. You know, I think has upside. He's very athletic, but he's very small, and he really struggled reading the NBA defenses last year. And he looked good in the G League, but that's very different. And he's not, you know, I don't think he is, at least right now, ready to maybe take on some of that. And I mean, it's interesting to me that that's and it not to harp on this too much, but it's interesting that like Langston Gawe is fine. Like he's an NBA player who can maybe play some minutes, but like at a position that is so saturated, it's interesting that like, this is where they ended up. And you would know better than me, but it's interesting that again, like a position that is so deep that the guys they ended up with are not exactly guys that you would say, okay, this guy's really going to help us at this point guard position if Reggie gets hurt, if he's in foul trouble we need. Like you maybe could have found someone that just emulates what he does a little bit better, or at least could facilitate for Andre Drummond, because they are a team that runs so much through him. To look at Drummond, how has he worked with Blake? I mean, how has that partnership worked and not worked since the trade went down? And when you look at how the Cavs are going to defend this, the Cavs are going to, at least because Kevin Love's still out, they're going to play LeBron at the four with maybe him guarding Blake Griffin, especially because no Jeff Green, so they don't even have another bigger forward to really go against him, unless they want to have Jetty Osman do it, which seems bad. But what do you see out of this more old school, even if they're both guys do some modern things, how is that partnership developed and not developed in whatever way?
It's been to some degree rather in flux at various stages throughout this 14 game stretch. Blake has been used as something of a backup five. The Pistons have really struggled with being able to roll out a backup center behind Andre Drummond. And to some degree, I think that they settled on Eric Moreland playing more of those backup 5 minutes once again for like the third or fourth or fifth time.
Another Canton Charge alum playing with the Pistons, which is kind of weird, but doesn't matter. And it is like just like a random trivia fact. But that's funny that there's two guys who played a lot with the Charge last year and were good with the Charge last year that are now factoring in Detroit in some way.
Right. And much like the situation with Bikes, Eric Moreland won his spot on this team with a really, really good summer league performance. And that's great, and I think the story is fantastic, and I'm really happy that Moreland is in the NBA. But I believe the Pistons have the seventh highest payroll in the NBA, and Eric Moreland and Dwight Bikes are getting meaningful, extensive minutes for a team that fancies itself to be a playoff competitor. So to go back to the last point, you know, it's just a team that has like flaws piled upon flaws, and that's you know, nothing against Eric Moreland or Dwight Bikes or Langston Galloway or anything like that. It's just, you know, they're things that should not be asked of them are being asked of them. But to your current point, I can't hammer that last topic enough, honestly, to my own fault, I think. I want to double check this, but I believe that Drummond's assists have been dropping since Blake came to town. I can't speak with authority as to why exactly that is, other than just the ball is in his hands a lot less now because Blake is running things. Blake is the highest usage guy the Pistons have had, this season or last season, really, pretty much in the Van Gundy era. So it reduces some of Andre Drummond's playmaking abilities, which, you know, we've really seen those shine this year. He's been a tremendous at times playmaker. Drummond's rebounding numbers are through the roof since Blake came to town. They were pretty high even before he arrived. He went on a pretty significant tear once All-Star announcements started coming out, and he got that snub, and I think he took that personally. He's been playing great ever since. He's been really good. I think I'm looking at when the Pistons have both Blake and Andre on the floor, they are taking a look at their net ratings here. They are plus 1.6, and on this team, that's something that you want to hang on to. You know, the Pistons, I think as a whole, their net rating is it's minus 1.3 on the season. It's I think just over 2 points. Yeah, it's minus 2.3 since Blake came to town. So, you know, if you've got a combination that gets heavy minutes that is in the green or in the black, I suppose you'd say, you'd take that. But it's probably the best functioning duo on this roster, and even so, it's barely above water, you know.
Does it have do the struggles of the Pistons have more to do with them or with just the fact that they maybe don't have the personnel, especially with Reggie out, to maximize them? Like, is it a mix of the two? Like, where do you kind of fall in this? What is sort of the root of the Pistons issues? And how culpable is Van Gundy, whether it's as an exec or as a coach?
I think all this falls on Van Gundy. He built this team. He assembled the game plan to utilize this team. And, you know, the point I made that basically, like, Reggie Jackson's injury was when all this ended. Reggie Jackson is a guy who has noted asthma problems. He has he had health issues before he came to the Pistons. I believe he had platelet-rich injections in his knee before he came to the Pistons in the first place. You know, presumably the Pistons did their homework before they traded for Jackson, made him the point guard of the future. But he's never going to be a guy that can get you 30 minutes per game, you know. Basically, this is a team that was built to function at its peak with a guy who is injury-prone and can't give you 30-plus minutes at your starting point guard position. So, you know, I think that when you put all of that together, I think that Van Gundy is culpable for the heaviest portion of it. I don't blame Andre Drummond for the struggles. I don't even blame, you know, Blake Griffin. I think that when that shot starts to fall, he's a dangerous guy. You know, he put up 31 points last night against the Miami Heat, and the Pistons still were really unimpressive. Andre Drummond put up big numbers last night against the Heat as well. And, you know, I don't blame those two guys. I don't blame Reggie Jackson for being injury prone. I don't blame the guys who are, you know, kind of overmatched in their positions. I blame Stan Van Gundy for assembling this team in its current form. I blame him for a game plan that doesn't function. I blame him for adjusting to changing circumstances very poorly. I think that, honestly, Van Gundy is the most culpable for all of this.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. And I think what his future will be is going to be really interesting to see, because we're not going to like dive into this, but it'd be interesting to see what their future is like and how attractive this job might be, considering Blake's contract, the looming possibility and maybe likelihood of him getting hurt. I mean, it's just like a very tricky proposition for whoever would theoretically take over him, and what kind of coach would be right to maximize it in the short term. It'd be interesting to just like think about that when you get to the summer. If he loses some, whether it's one job or both jobs, that would be kind of interesting to do. Like, would he get the axe, or would he get the Budenholzer treatment, where they hire in someone from the Warriors or the Rockets to take over and then oversee? And that would be interesting to find out. The Pistons right now, you said they lose to the Heat, four games back, tiebreaker issues. They have all these other issues that we've run through. In your mind, right now, we're recording on March 4th. They play the Cavs on March 5th. Are they out of the playoff race already? Like, is their season basically now hoping that they can get lucky in the lottery and keep their pick?
Yeah, I think that's really all there is to it now. I don't think this is a playoff team. I looked last night after the game on 538's season predictions, and I think that the Pistons right now are at 7% to make the playoffs. And honestly, I kind of think that's generous.
What does that say to you? Like, if that, I mean, obviously that seems like it's going to happen, just those issues. But what does that say to you about what comes next? Like, what does that indicate to you about what's next for the Pistons in whatever way, whether that's roster change, coaching change, front office changes? What does that say to you about what could be next?
According to a report from the Sporting News in the last week or so, Van Gundy is coaching for at least one of his jobs. It sounds like Aaron Tellem, who is Pistons right now, he's a business side. He's the president of the business operations.
And it should be noted was a long time agent.
Yes.
For a long time before he took this job, he was a power broker amongst agents.
Yeah, probably the agent, really. So it sounds like he may be relieving Van Gundy of one or both jobs. He would probably either be taking over himself as president of basketball operations, or be the guy in charge of finding the next president of basketball operations. And then you'd have to think that with Van Gundy with only 1 year left on his contract, more than likely, whoever takes over as PBO would be also in charge of finding the next coach, bringing in his own guy. So it really seems like if there are no playoffs, that Van Gundy is going to be losing at least one of his roles. And if he loses one, he will probably either lose or just give up the other, as I think that he wants to have like total control. And I think that's kind of a prerequisite for him in this job. So there's, at a glance at least, there's really not a lot of flexibility or opportunity to add to this roster going forward. I think other than like a mid-level exception, I think that going into the summer, all they've got is like veteran minimum contracts. And I think they've got a second round draft pick for this coming season. You know, maybe they'll get lucky and retain their draft pick somehow. But the only time the Pistons have ever moved up in the lottery, they ended up with Darko. So I don't see, you know, I just don't think this is going to be the second time that lightning strikes and they get bailed out. And honestly, with how poorly things have been managed, I don't think that they should get lucky either, honestly. So yeah, I don't see a whole lot more than just changes at the top being likely going forward.
Last thing here, when you look at the Cavs, when you look at, I don't know how much you've had a chance to watch them or just like think about their moves, but what do you, when you look at this game, what are the ways you think what you're looking for in this game? What are some of the aspects of Monday's game that you're looking forward to seeing how they play out?
I think the Pistons are probably pretty significant underdogs unless they just like hit everything. You know, Reggie Bullock and Stanley Johnson went off the last time the Pistons played the Cavs, and you know, even there with you know, Isaiah was still a Cav and struggled, and Kevin Love I think I think he got hurt like 2 minutes into the game.
Yeah, this was the game. It feels like forever ago, honestly.
It really does. It really does.
You had the Kevin Love gets his hand, I don't like, just caught in, I think, Anthony Tolliver's jersey, and it gets bent weird. Isaiah was still a Cav, which is like just kind of crazy to think about. Yeah, I mean, it so much has changed and happened since then, and it was barely a month ago. I mean, the All Star break, you know, Megan's there's a break and everything, but it's crazy how long it feels like since.
Yeah, the Cavs have almost turned over the whole roster. The Pistons made a trade for Blake Griffin. It was the day before that. I remember this the day before the game because there was some discussion that Blake might be able to suit up for that one.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I have a buddy who lives in Michigan, and I was like, yeah, you might at least get to see his welcoming if you go to the game. It's not just you get to see LeBron. You might get to see this thing, and then I don't even know if they announced him or anything at Little Caesars. But yeah, I couldn't even like tell you about that game because. I just don't know how much I actually think about what the pre-deadline Cavs, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a whole different thing right now, and that's kind of why it's hard for me to really you know, assess what I think of the Cavs specifically, because I haven't had a whole lot of opportunity to watch this new look team. They haven't existed for very long, but you know what I do know is that like the Pistons would probably be a small underdog to the Grand Rapids Drive right now if the Drive had a night off the night before. So I think that unless everything goes right for the Pistons for the first time in a long time, you know, like basically I think probably the last time that happened was against the Cavs, where Stanley Johnson had the night of his life and Reggie Bullock had the night of his life and a bunch of guys just, you know, lit the place up. I think the Pistons are really in for a difficult time against the Cavs.
I'm interested to see how this goes. The Cavs have not looked great. The defense has not looked great, and I think there's some people hoping that maybe the Nuggets just having a system and the Cavs still learning is an indicator that maybe they're better than they looked on Saturday when they gave up a lot of points. The Nuggets shot over 50% from three. If the Pistons come out and scorch the Cavs from three and whatnot, it's gonna be a problem. And I'm very, very curious to see how the Cavs handle this bigger front court right now. They just don't really have the personnel to deal with something this bulky. No Jeff Green, he's got lower back issue. Takes away one of the bodies they might have thrown at Blake. There's no Kevin Love still. They cannot, for the life of them, I think, play Nance and Tristan Thompson together. So a lot hinges on what LeBron's going to do on defense and what they asked Jetty Osman and some of these other guys to do. I'm very curious to see how that plays out. I think the Cavs probably are favorites in this game just for the reasons we've talked about. But it's going to be interesting. 7 p.m. at Quicklands Arena in Cleveland, Ohio. The Cavs are favorites in the betting line, and it's a win I think they need as they go into the All-Star, as they go into this West Coast road trip. And maybe not as much as the Pistons need a win right now, but they do need this win. Duncan, thanks so much for coming on.
My pleasure, Chris. Thank you.
So that'll be it for today's show. Be sure to find Duncan on Twitter at DuncanSmithNBA. If you want to support the podcast, go to iTunes, leave a 5-star rating and review. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CDibbinWrites. Find the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. And if you want more Locked On NBA, that show is now Monday through Friday, a variety of hosts each weekday covering the NBA from all angles. Check that out as well on iTunes or wherever you get podcasts. And I'll talk to you again on Tuesday with a recap of Cavs Pistons with Lex Hooper at Lex Hooper, Alex Hooper from 90.23 The Fan in Cleveland. We'll talk to you then.